Good morning, church. Every week I tell you that I love you, and I do, I love you. And I love you for a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons I love you, of course, is because you're my brothers and sisters. Jesus has bound us together. So I love you for that reason. But I also love you because I think this is a phenomenal church family. I cannot tell you how much I love this church family, and every week you give me new reasons to love you even more. I was thinking about last night. Last night, a group of teenagers took it upon themselves to get together and study the Bible and discuss their questions about the Trinity, as teenagers typically do on Saturday evenings, you know. That's amazing to me. And that's just one of countless reasons that I think that this is a phenomenal congregation, and there is no place I would rather be than with you. But let's be real, too. We can say that on the one hand, and I hope that you feel that way. I hope that you feel like this is the best church family you've ever been a part of, or if you're visiting with us this morning, I hope that you feel the love of the Lord and the love of the people here. But I mean, we can be real as well and realize that we're not perfect. Individually, none of us in this room is perfect. Collectively, as a church family, none of us are perfect either. And it's possible you felt that as well. It's possible that you've been frustrated with your church family, that you've wished your church family would do something different or do something better. It's even possible that at times, or maybe even right now, you've felt like you're done. Done with this church, done with church in general. That happens as well, doesn't it? We've probably all felt that way at one time or another because of one reason or another. But I want to ask us a question this morning that I want us to really wrestle with. What can you do to help the church be what it's supposed to be? You could make a list, I'm sure. We could all make a list of what other people can do. That's not what we're talking about this morning. We're talking about what you can do to help the church be what it's supposed to be. If you recognize that there are things that aren't the way that they're supposed to be, that there are things happening that aren't what are supposed to be happening, or things that should be happening that aren't happening, then let's ask ourselves, what can we do? What can you do to help the church be what it's supposed to be? This morning, I want to talk about two verses, just two verses. It's no guarantee on the length of the sermon, but two verses. I want to talk about two verses, and then I actually have a special guest, Barrett Bingham, my friend, my brother, co-worker, is going to come up and share some practical ways that we can work this out in our congregation. But I want to talk about two verses, Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25. So you can go ahead and start turning over there, Hebrews chapter 10. And Hebrews, as Sam was talking about a minute ago, Hebrews is a book that was written to a church family that was not doing well. The original audience of the book of Hebrews was not doing well. They were really struggling. They were Christians who, they had had it. They were done. They were discouraged, and they were going back to the life that they had before. They were done with Christianity. They were done following Jesus. And there were others that were on the cusp of doing the same. They were on the cusp of leaving and walking away. And so the writer of Hebrews, whoever that was, this author is writing this book to them to encourage them to do what we've been encouraging ourselves all year to do, be loyal. Be loyal. Be loyal to Jesus and be loyal to one another. And that's specifically what we want to think about this morning. We want to think about how we are called to be loyal to Jesus, but we are also called to be loyal to the church. To be loyal to our brothers and sisters in Christ, regardless of what happens. And we have to think about, what does that look like? What does it look like to be loyal to one another? What does it look like to be loyal to our brothers and sisters? Look at Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 says this, "And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works." I want to focus on that first phrase, "let us consider." If you want to know what can you do to help the church be what it's supposed to be, that's one thing you can do. You can consider. That means contemplate. Think carefully about something. Come up with some ideas. When's the last time that you did that? When's the last time that you seriously considered your brothers and sisters in Christ? And ask yourself, and I wonder who's struggling this week. I wonder who is on the cusp of walking away from Jesus and the people of Jesus and the way of Jesus. I wonder who could really use some encouragement this week. I wonder who's really in need this week. I wonder who has a burden that I could help carry. How has God empowered me and gifted me to help and teach and encourage and be there for someone else? And who could I bless this week? So if you want to know, what can you do to help the church be what it's supposed to be? That's the first thing. Let us consider, think about carefully, contemplate what we can do. And then there's that next phrase, how to stir up one another. How to stir up one another. I like that. There's a good way to stir stuff up and a bad way to stir stuff up, right? We've probably done both. We talk about somebody's stirring up trouble. And that's what that word literally means. It means to agitate, to irritate. And there's a good way to agitate and a bad way to agitate. We don't want to do the bad way of agitating. We want to do the good way of agitating, the good way of stirring up, of irritating. You've ever been around somebody that, I mean, they're so passionate about God, they're so passionate about their faith, that it's almost irritating, you know? Be that. Be that. Here's what you're supposed to consider. Here's what you're supposed to contemplate. Here's what you're supposed to think carefully about. How can I agitate people, excite people, stir up people? I think a good phrase that we use now is fire up people. How can I help get people fired up? You want to know what you can do? You want to know how you can help the church be what the church is supposed to be? Then think deeply, think carefully, consider, contemplate how you can fire people up. You can excite them. You can stir them up. The gathering together of God's people should be exciting. Should be exciting. And you play a part in that. When's the last time you thought about your role in exciting people? I mean, it's easy, isn't it, to walk away from a church assembly, to walk away from a Bible class, to walk away from a devotional or some other gathering of God's people and say, well, I didn't get anything out of that. Or I wasn't excited by that, or I didn't really feel moved by that. Okay, you should get excited. I'm not saying that shouldn't happen, but what if you went there and you asked yourself, what can I do to excite other people? What can I do to help fire other people up? If other people feel discouraged, if other people aren't excited about doing and being what they're supposed to be, what can you do to fire them up? To excite them, to stir them up to love and good works. See, it's one thing to just get excited for excitement's sake, and that's one thing, and we could just walk away and say, well, it's good to be alive, it's another great day, I'm so glad to be a Christian, I'm so glad to be saved. I mean, that's good. I want us to be excited about those things. But the Hebrew writer says you need to be considering, you need to be contemplating, you need to be thinking carefully and deeply about how to stir up other people, excite other people, fire them up to very practical things, to love and good works. I mean, when's the last time you stopped and thought to yourself, you know, I know that so-and-so and so-and-so are really struggling in their marriage. I know that this person is feeling discouraged and they're really struggling at school or they're really struggling at work. I wonder what I could do to help excite them, to help stir them up, to fire them up, to be a better husband, to be a better wife, to be a faithful witness in the community, in their workplace, in their school. What could I do to excite them? What could I do to fire them up? You know, again, it's no secret, is it, that there is a spirit of fear and anxiety in our culture right now? Would you agree with that? A divisive spirit, a polarized spirit, an angry spirit, a fearful spirit. And you can contribute to that You could contribute to that. You could contribute to that when you gather together with other Christian people. We could just get together and wring our hands and, oh, what's this world coming to? And you could contribute to the fear and the anxiety that's going on, the anger that's going on. Or you can say, what can I do to excite people, to fire people up, to stir them up to love and good works? What if interactions with you, led to people being less angry and more committed to going out and loving their neighbor? What if interactions with you led to people being less fearful and more loyal, more committed to being a better husband, to being a better wife, to being a better student, to be a better employee, to be more faithful to Jesus in every aspect of their life? Verse 25, he says this, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some. Now, in spite of the way we have a tendency to kind of use this verse as sort of a hammer to hit people on the head with, it's not like, you know, don't ever miss church for any reason. That's not exactly what he's saying. This word neglect means to abandon or forsake. In fact, here's what the Greek word means. It means to separate connection with. To separate connection with someone or something, to forsake, abandon, desert. The Hebrew writer says, what can you do? What can you do to help other people not desert the church, abandon the church, forsake the church? You obviously should not forsake the assembling together of ourselves, but your calling, not just the ministry staff, not just the elders, not just the deacons, but you, whatever your role is, you can consider how to excite people for them to be more loyal because of their interactions with you. And not to contribute to the abandoning or the walking away or the forsaking, but to, this next phrase, encouraging one another. Encouraging one another. In fact, the Greek word there literally means to call someone by your side. Call someone by your side. Who could you do that to? Who could you call to your side and encourage them? Help instill courage into them. It means to urge them. Urge them strongly, to exhort them, to appeal to them, to plead with them. And it says encourage one another. That one another, I know you're real interested in this, but it's a reciprocal pronoun. It means you do something for someone else, but you also allow that to be done to you. And sometimes both sides of that are a challenge for us, aren't they? What can you do? What can you do to help the church be what the church is supposed to be? Well, here's what we can do. Faithfully encourage others and allow others to encourage you. That's what loyalty is, faithfulness, commitment. And I just want us to stop and ask ourselves, are we committed to that? Are we being faithful in that calling? That calling to faithfully encourage other people to show up here on Sunday and on Wednesday or get together with our brothers and sisters, call somebody up, send somebody a text and say, hey, would you come over to my house with the intentional purpose of encouraging them, but also, just as important, allowing them to encourage you. Sometimes we are resistant to other people encouraging us. We're just committed to being angry. We're just committed to being afraid. We're committed to being discouraged. We're committed to being distraught. We need to let other people encourage us. But we also need to be an active part of encouraging others. Again, like I said, this is an amazing church. I love this place because you encourage me constantly. But again, we have a ways to go. We have things that could get better. And one of the things I'm excited about is Barrett Bingham and his whole family being here. And Barrett is our new connections minister. And I believe he has so many great things in store for us in his ministry. But also this morning, he's going to share with us about how we can encourage one another.
Guys, we didn't practice that transition, but I nailed that timing. Good morning, church. It's good to see you. Thank you, Wes. I have done a little bit of stand-up comedy, not a brag, but I don't know if you've ever had to like interrupt a headlining comedian or like, I don't know, a great full-time headlining preacher and just do your best, but that's what I'm doing this morning. So thank you, Wes, for the opportunity to tell you all some about myself and my passion and my ministry that we're going to partner together in here at McDermott Road. And thank you all. I know you didn't have a say in the matter, but I appreciate you letting me interrupt. My parents are here this morning, and it's important for me to know that you know that was coincidental. They did not fly here to watch me preach for 10 to 15 minutes. Obviously, they are here for the grandkids, and this is just a convenient thing. This is my family. Jenna is my wife. My oldest is Bear, and then the twins are Lake and Camp. And I chose this picture because it is recent. It's probably one of our better photos. And I wanted you to know that I am a selfless, sacrificial father, because look at my hair. That's a terrible photo of me, but I chose it anyway because I'm such a good guy. Okay. A year ago, my family moved to Northeast Arkansas. And we started a career that I thought was going to be the answer to hundreds of my prayers of, God, what am I supposed to do after full-time ministry? And so I thought, full-time rice farming. There it is. That's the answer. A family farm kind of fell into my lap. I thought, not what I meant, God, but, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe this is what we're supposed to be doing. So a year ago, we moved into what was going to be our forever home, and we started this forever career. And it was only a few weeks into a new season that I knew I had made a wrong decision. So through harvest and through a long winter of grain hauling and through planting, God revealed to me that ultimately I was in a very much a Jonah season. And that was a very tough thing for me to learn. He made it very clear that I was meant for something else and that I had run from a calling. And it was, again, tough season for me and my family. There was a famous news anchor that once got in trouble for announcing that he was dating his co-anchor on television. And he said, I wanted to shout it from a mountaintop, but I didn't have a mountain. I had a newsroom and a microphone. Well, I don't have a newsroom, but I do have this stage and I have this microphone. And I told God if I was ever given an opportunity like this ever again, that I would share how loving and how loyal he has been to me and to my family. And so that's how, long story short, I've ended up here and we've ended up partnering together in a connections ministry. Because at the same time that all of that was happening in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas, the leadership here at McDermott Road was saying, how can we better connect our members? There are so many people that are coming and joining and participating here, and still there are so many that leave because they lack connection. As Mark began to plan his ministry and focus on evangelism and outreach, the leadership said, we need someone, let's see if we can get to the next slide there, to make sure our partners in the gospel are connected to Christ and his church. The idea of a connections minister was born. What is a connections minister? Why do we need one? Well, like Wes was saying, someone that is separated from church, whether they actually are or they feel that they are, is an emergency. That is a problem. And so it became a focus for our leadership to find someone to make sure that we are intentional about our people and our programming, connecting the body to Christ, the church, leaders and resources. There's my elevator pitch for the Connection Ministry. I want to partner with you in making sure that everyone that wants to work in the gospel here at McDermott Road and beyond is connected to Christ, church, leaders, and resources. Because you might have that experience, but that is not everyone's experience all the time. We want to make sure that everything we do emphasizes those connections. Make sure that everybody is not just feels that way, but that's the reality and the actuality of the situation here. Now, that's the big picture. But what does that look like? Like Wes said when he teed me up here, what does encouragement or meaningful connection actually, practically, concrete, day-to-day terms, what does it look like? What can you do to make sure we are connected as a congregation, connected as the church? Well, first, you can commit to study. You can be committed to meaningful, quality Bible study with one another. We want to make sure that every person is committed to something, right? Some sort of study, whether that's a Sunday morning, a Wednesday evening, or whenever you need it. We have this congregational subscription, right, to Right Now Media. So if you need a personal Bible study, if you're leading a small group Bible study, if you are leading a neighborhood study, if you are meeting with an unchurched person or someone that has no idea what church is or Bible study is, we want to give you the resources to be connected to studying. Secondly, we want to make sure that every person that is part of the body here, a member of the body here, is connected to a service opportunity. Our desire is that you commit to service in some capacity. Attendance is not connection. Neither is busyness, but attendance is definitely not, right? And being busy for the sake of being busy is not connection. We want you to serve from a place of passion and connection and a place of love and meaningfulness. And we want you to be committed to a mission effort or a ministry team to feed and to clothe people. We want to make sure that you are helping in a Bible class or a worship service. We want you to commit to one another by serving together and serving alongside each other. Finally, authentic connection to church and Christ is manifest in meaningful relationships, relationships where you are supporting others in the good times and the tough times, like Wes has already mentioned, supporting one another and allowing others to support you. And so I think we'll see this highlighted in our life groups, in our Bible classes, and how you commune together in your classes and outside of your study opportunities. In our Brothers Keepers and our heartfelt friends and lots of other new ideas that so many of you have already approached me about as how we can support each other better. We want you to be in authentic and meaningful relationships where you are celebrated, challenged, and carried, and that you can celebrate and challenge and carry your brothers and sisters. I want to invite Wes back up to stand awkwardly behind me while I finish this. Supporting one another, doing life together, is not just best practices. And I'm going to very quickly click through some of these scriptures, because supporting each other, doing life together, is a natural response to salvation. It is our calling. It is God's plan for you. It is our expectation for you as a member of the body here. And it is our encouragement to one another. If you start in those three areas, if you are committed to those three things, if you are committed to one another over and over, the connection will become natural. I've had the opportunity to visit with several brothers and sisters here. I love how excited Ronnie and Steve are about our men's ministry. I want you to ask John DeShazo about his Brothers Keepers group and his time teaching in children's ministry. The IT guy, teaching in children's ministry, right? That's great. I want you to ask Randy and Debbie Jacobs about the divorce care and a service that came from a place of passion and excitement and a need. I want you to talk to Haven Miller about First Coffee, a class for our regular visitors that he saw a need for and is now serving in that area. A lot of you have had an incredible experience at McDermott Road, but it's not always the case. We want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to create something that helps you to feel connected, to find things like those things and ministries like that to serve and support and study with one another. I look forward to doing the work of connecting with you and all of that entails. Wes.
I am incredibly excited about Barrett's new role, and I'm incredibly excited about what the Lord has in store for us here. And I hope that we are all committed to one another in these ways, and that we are committed to celebrating each other, to challenging each other, and to carrying one another, and again, to allowing ourselves to be challenged and celebrated, and at times even carried as we live out our life together. I want to go back to the verse we were just in, Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25, and finish out the statement that the Hebrew writer makes. He says, encouraging one another, and all the more as you, what's that next word, church? See the day drawing near. Now, I've never really, really focused in on the word see in this passage, but I think it's incredibly important. In fact, it's what the whole book of Hebrews is about. It's about the difference between what the world sees and what people of faith see. Because people of faith see what they can't see with their eyes. That's what faith is. Faith is being able to see what can't be seen with your eyes. It is living according to what you know is true, what you believe is true because of the promises of God, because of the character of God, because of the deeds of God, because of what God has done and who God is and what God has promised to do. You can see a reality that can't be seen with the eyes. You can see an invisible reality. You are committed to an invisible reality. You are loyal to an invisible reality. Your allegiance is to a king that can't be seen with the eyes. What is it that the world sees? What does the world see? As you look around and as your neighbors look around, what do we see? We see conflict. We see wars. We see pleasure, treasure, and power. We see presidents coming and going. We see conflict. We see all kinds of things, good and bad, exciting and discouraging. We see all kinds of things. But the real question is, what do you see? What do you see? As we close this morning, that's what I want to ask us to contemplate, to consider. What do you see? Do you see Christ on his throne? Do you see the better king? Do you see the better sacrifice? Do you see the better high priest? Do you see the city of God that is coming? Do you see the promises of God? Do you see the day drawing near? He says, as we see the day drawing near. Do you see that? Do you see the day of Christ drawing near? Did you know that today, September 1st, 2024, this is the closest day that has ever been to the second coming of Jesus? Did you know that? Today, right now, this moment is the closest moment that has ever been. You get to live in the closest moment to the second coming of Jesus than anyone ever. This moment, right now. I don't know how many more days, how many more weeks, how many more months, how many more years. I don't know when Jesus is coming, but I know he's coming. And that day is drawing near. Do you see it drawing near? Do you live in anticipation of that day? And if you see the day drawing near, then you should also see your brothers and sisters. Do you see them? I know maybe your big question is, do they see me? I get that. I understand that. And that's an important question too. Do they see you? But I can't control that. You can't control that. But what you can control is whether or not you see them. Do you see your brothers and sisters? Do you see their heartache? Do you see their discouragement? Do you see that they need someone to encourage them as the day draws near? So listen to the Hebrew writer. Be loyal to Jesus. Be loyal to one another. And encourage one another as you see the day drawing near. That day is coming. Are you ready? Not just, were you baptized? That's a good question. In fact, let's ask ourselves that question. Have you been baptized? Have you been washed? Have you been cleansed? Have you committed yourself to Jesus? Have you pledged your allegiance to the King? Have you received his forgiveness? Have you received the gift of the Holy Spirit? Do you belong to his people? That's a good question. Are you ready for that day? But even if you made that decision, maybe you made that decision a long time ago, but you're not really ready for that day. You're not really living in anticipation of that day. You're not really living in light of that day. You need to make some changes. You need to make some adjustments. You need to make some recommitments in your life to Jesus or maybe to the people of Jesus. I want to encourage you to do that this morning. Or maybe you're just carrying a heavy burden. Again, as I like to remind us, we're not mind readers here. I wish we were. I wish we could read each other's minds and know what's going on even without you telling us. And maybe you think, well, they ought to know. They ought to know I'm struggling with this. They ought to know I need encouragement. But they don't. We don't. We don't know unless you tell us. Share your burdens with us. Share your discouragement with us. Let us encourage you. Let us pray for you. Let us hug you. Let us be a shoulder for you to cry on. Again, as we say every week, our shepherds meet in the prayer room. And I want you to know how often your shepherds pray for you. When your shepherds, when your elders meet in their weekly meeting or in the meetings that they have on Wednesday nights, do you know how much of that time is committed to praying for you? They love you. And they would love to hear what's going on in your life and how they can pray with you and for you. Maybe it's something that you want to celebrate with somebody. They'd love to celebrate with you. Or maybe it's something that you need somebody to weep with you and pray with you. They would love to do that with you. Or you could tell anybody in this room, find a brother or sister. Let them know you need some encouragement. Let them know you need somebody to pray for you and with you. Or you can come forward and tell all of us as together we stand and sing this song.